It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, welcome back to Season 4 of Pigeonhole Hockey, a participating member of the Hockey Podcast Network. This is Chris and today's co-host, Steve.
Hey, how's it going, hockey fans?
And you know us, we're just a couple goalies that have taken one too many pucks at the head and do not claim to be hockey experts, but simply overzealous hockey fans that love to play, watch, read, and talk about hockey. On this episode, we want to welcome back special guest, GM for the NCDC's Provo Predators, Nick Dreyer. Nick, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for jumping back on. And as Steve quickly told me, hey, let's get this thing recording. We're missing a lot of great banter because that's what we do, Steve. We talk for, what is it now, 10 minutes we were talking before we actually hit the record button, talking to Nick about our, I guess we all have hockey collections, sport card collections, and Nick's been on the show before. So listeners, go back and take a listen to, we have a bunch of previous episodes with Nick. Currently the general manager and assistant coach for the Provo Predators. But Nick, your Provo Predators are headed to the playoffs.
Yeah. We finished up regular season last night. We had a couple of odd midweek games in Idaho, but we get a couple extra days off before we get started next Friday against the Outliers. So
what did you think about playing in a potato barn?
This year was a lot different than last year. Last year, with the new organization, we did not have much success there. We didn't play them much earlier in the year when they were still trying to get stuff figured out as well. And by the time they got everything figured out in the second half, every time we went there, we did not fare very well. But this year, we did well. I mean, every game I think we've played against them, I think they got the better of us last night by a pretty good score. And we got them once in our building by a pretty good score. But every other game was pretty much a one-goal game or overtime shootout. So just like any other game in the division here, it's always tight. But it was good. We had a good year there. So
Chris was saying it looks like a nice barn to play in. What are your thoughts on that arena?
It kind of blows you away. And like that was a thing for us early in the year, right? Cause we have a very young team. We play a lot of our, younger kids, a lot of minutes, and they're used to playing in front of mom and dad. Right. So when you take them to an environment like that and put them in front of, 4,000 or 5,000 fans that are a little more hostile than other environments, it's different. It takes some adjusting and it's a tough go early on, but our guys adjusted really quick. But I always tell our guys, and that's kind of one of my recruiting pitches, is the only thing better than playing in that building every night is going in there as a road team and winning a game. So that's what we use. And our guys love playing there, and the facilities are top notch. Their staff is awesome. Their game day operations are awesome. It's just a really good environment for, a coaching staff, but more so, our players.
And I think that's something that when players are looking for where they want to be playing the following season, when they take a look at the barns in the Mountain Division for the NCDC, they've got some beautiful barns and big crowds, lots of involvement, because we're talking, obviously, Idaho sets the standard currently for not only just the West, but probably the NCDC as a whole and potentially most of junior hockey in the United States. I mean, to fill out a 4,000 seat barn every night and be the hottest ticket in town still after a couple seasons is saying something. Then you got the other arenas, and you got Ogden and Pueblo. You've got you guys down there in Provo, as well as Utah, I think, is going to be establishing a new arena in Park City. Excited to see what that looks like. And then you have Rock Springs also. I mean, from what I've heard, they fill that barn. You can't tell on the television a lot of times with these barns. But the NCDC West is something that players should consider if they want to play in front of a crowd, for sure.
Yeah, and I think, every team in our division, their home ice has unique characteristics. And I think like it's not cookie cutter, right? So like Ogden, you know, I was fortunate enough to coach and work there for a few years with Kenny. And, you know, that's for me, like that barn is with the backdrop and the glass and the mountains in the background, especially late in the year like this when it's still daylight outside. Like we played there last Saturday. The visuals are just stunning. Like it's just it's a great place. And, you know, I think, you know, being around, like they have some very intelligent fans there. They kind of understand the game because they've been around it for a long time. And that was one of the things with Idaho. Like they have a great fan base and they're very passionate. But, you know, you could tell last year like that hockey was still kind of new to a lot of them. So it was kind of like a feeling out process. But, you know, Pueblo's for me probably the most intimidating environment just because it's so tight and so close, and you got to walk past their, you know, fans and their beer garden to get to the bench as a coaching staff. And, you know, like we played there a couple months ago, and you know, they had like, I think it was the Colorado State Pueblo baseball team there, so there was like 30 guys right by where our players come on and off the ice, you know, giving them a hard time and getting after our goalie. And just to have that type of environment and be able to put a visiting team under that kind of stress is always an advantage. And, you know, Tyler and Chris and Jerry and all those guys up in Pueblo do such a great job with their game day ops and the way everything's run there. And, you know, obviously their social media presence, you know, they're a huge part of what we're trying to do out here as far as promoting our league and getting the best players possible, the best young players possible, and trying to get them into Division I hockey. So.
Yeah. And that's one of the things we were talking about before we jumped on the podcast was just the Jersey Rinkin' episode we had a few weeks back that I got some pretty heated responses on, I'm not going to lie. But Provo and Pueblo ended up finishing 1-2 out of the 69 teams between the USPHL Tier 3 and the NCDC Tier 2 leagues. And so to finish 1-2 right there, just God, the beautiful jerseys there in the West too. I think Ogden finished in the top 10. Rock Springs was top 15.
Idaho was up there too, wasn't it?
Yeah, Idaho was top 15, and y'all gave Utah the cold shoulder. I had Utah in my top 20, but most of you weren't too much of fans of it. And again, for some of you teams that you didn't hear yourselves ranked, it doesn't mean you were completely hated by every ranker, but 69 teams, someone's got to lose.
Hey, I'll be honest. Like there's only a few that reserved hate for me. And that's the ones that didn't put.
Oh no, there were seven of them that we all agreed and we all hated. And one of them is no longer part of the league. So
wait, is it appropriate to ask who finished number 69?
All I can say is the team that finished 69th is no longer a team in the USPHL.
Okay. Okay, that's fair enough. Yeah.
They are
zero effort into the jersey. Well done.
but yeah, it's well, you have to admit when your logo is a sponsor, it's pretty easy to finish dead last. And again, it's just cool color scheme. Like I thought, I mean, some of you guys hated it, but I thought the color scheme was fire. I don't appreciate Season 2 and Season 3 jerseys being a sponsor. But getting back to the NCDC Mountain Division, now that I can see with you guys and Idaho wrapping up the game last night and Idaho officially stepping into that fourth and final seed in the Mountain Division for the playoffs, the schedule has officially dropped. And I do like it being spread out. But, Nick, you're going to have to explain it to me because I stare down the NCDC's playoff format. I don't get what they're saying. So explain to me and the listeners that shows that the Mountain Division's top four teams make the playoffs, best of five semifinal Friday between Friday, March 29th to Sunday, April 7th. But I can see that first round of action basically stretches out to, if not incorrect, all the way up to April 6th. So what happens to the top two teams that come out of that first initial playoff round?
Yeah. So like what they basically did is, I mean, the league, from a scheduling standpoint, right? Like we all have our own dynamics we have to deal with our rinks and situations, right? Like, you know, we play, for example, you know, that's in a rink that's owned by the county, right? So there's a lot more stuff than just us being a tenant there. Whereas, you know, in Idaho, obviously they're the main tenant, and same thing with a couple of the other teams like Pueblo, right? If they were to get in. So, you know, I think what they ended up doing is they gave us a window of time. I think it was like a 10-day snapshot to finish our first round. And they were pretty flexible, like with logistics, obviously, you know, us playing the Outliers is about as close can get for travel. So, you know, they're about 40 minutes south of us or 30 minutes south of us. So, you know, that's an easy one logistically for us. But you know, the structure that they suggested was a 2-2-1. So, you know, the home team, the higher seed, would host games 1, 2, and 5. But, you know, like there are some wiggle, or there was some wiggle room the league gave us if we wanted to do alternating home games, with obviously game one starting off at the higher seed. So they just kind of let that work, or let us work that out between each team logistically so that it made the most sense. And so we could keep it safe for our guys. Like, we don't want them obviously, you know, playing 3-3, or, you know, we don't want to try to put them in situations where they're playing, you know, a huge amount of games in a short period of time, especially, you know, under the circumstances and pressure of the playoffs they're already going through. So, yeah, they did a good job of giving us like a little window of time to kind of spread things out. So after we get through that first best of five, I haven't seen the schedule for Ogden and Idaho yet. I know ours is Friday, Saturday at Acord against the Outliers, Wednesday in our building, Friday in our building, and Saturday in their building the following weekend if it gets there. So, you know, we've got two weekend games, back-to-back weekends, and then that midweek game in the middle to try to get everything finished up. So,
yeah, and I think what kind of got me down that look was that because Idaho officially made it in, Eric Moon dropped the schedule and Idaho retweeted it, but it looks like same thing. They play Friday and Saturday night, the 29th and 30th, and then they have games the 1st, the 3rd, and the 5th, with the 1st and the 3rd being in Idaho and the 5th being back in Ogden, of course, games 4 and 5 if necessary. But, okay, so say hypothetically Provo, you guys end up taking down Utah, and say someone comes out of the Idaho-Ogden series, and so let's say it's Idaho, so it's a farther travel there. How would that work out between Provo and Idaho in terms of, like, I know that you guys would then be the hosting team, but is there a window of time frame for those to be meshed up? Because I see here that the best of five, okay, it does say the best of five between April 12th to April 21st.
Yeah, so it'll just next weekend after the 5th and 6th. So the April, it'll start on the 12th or 13th, and it'll get wrapped up by, I would assume, the 20th. So, you know, it's pretty much like we tried keeping it the same as the regular season where you're playing two games a weekend. But obviously with us, you know, if we have to squeeze that fifth game in, it makes things a little different. But yeah, so it's pretty much starting next Friday. It's just, you know, two weekend games, probably a midweek game, and then two more weekend games for us. I think with Idaho, they've got a lot more stuff to juggle as far as logistics go, is, you know, concerts, all kinds of different stuff in their venue. I think they just had Disney on Ice, and Eric told me that he spent, you know, a good amount of time getting the ice even ready. I think they had to re-put it in from ground up for our games last week, or for our games Wednesday, Thursday that we just finished. So there's a lot more that goes into it for them with other events that come through town. So I'm sure, you know, after we get through the first round, if we're still alive and kicking, that, you know, it'll just be a conversation between Eric and myself and the two organizations to figure out logistically, you know, what makes the most sense. But for me in the playoffs, like I always like the real structure of the 2-2-1 with the higher seed, obviously having 1, 2, and 5, you know, and as a road team, like we are in the first round, you know, your goal is to obviously try to gain home ice advantage by winning one of those first two games and, you know, in their building, and then coming back to yours with a chance to hopefully finish it off. So that's kind of how we structured it and what we're doing. But yeah, I think it's just going to go from series to series and, you know, see how everything breaks down logistically that makes the most sense for everybody involved.
Yeah, and before we actually move into like a discussion of the playoffs and your upcoming series against Utah, you've had an amazing, fun season. I love the New Jersey look, as we were all talking here. Steve was curious on where he finalized his score for it. He ranked the Provo Predators the 7th best jersey. Yeah, you gave him 7th, and you'd given Pueblo 4th. I'd given Provo number 1, and I'd give Pueblo 6th. So they're good looking jerseys, I will say. And then Ogden again finishing 9th. I had a look here. Idaho Falls finished 14th, and Rock Springs finished 10th. But yeah, Utah got the cold shoulder, finishing well outside. I won't say where, but yeah, I ranked them 20th, and not one of you. Well, Justin gave them 24th. Justin Monroe gave him 24th, but everyone else apparently hated him. You know, so me,
well,
and Justin,
I think what the Outliers look like, right? It's a classic look as far as the mountains gone. Like they haven't deviated from their original design, right? Like they've had that design for a long time. And, yeah, you know, I think that's probably something that, you know, people that vote, they always like new shiny stuff, right? So we've got new shiny jerseys this year. And You know, Pueblo did a little bit of a redesign over the last couple of years. So I always think that helps, right? But, you know, I think if you probably go back 3 or 4 years, you know, I would say Utah would probably rank higher with their jerseys. I like their jerseys. I like their color scheme. I think it's just kind of been that same look and that traditional look they've had since they kind of came into, what was it, the Western States League, right?
Yeah, Western States Hockey League, yeah. Yeah, and I think it's a good-looking jersey. Like I said, I ranked the 20th. And, I mean, when you see that jersey live, too, I think the difference is me and Justin have seen it live, where the other three voters haven't. When you see that jersey live, especially because Utah's, whatever, the Accord, I think, Ice Center is where they play. When you see when the natural light's shining on those jerseys, or when they come to Ogden and that natural light shines on those jerseys are sharp. So I think that's the difference is me and Justin have seen them live. I ranked them 20th and Justin ranked them the high 20s, and everyone else, the three people who haven't seen them live, gave them pretty low scores. But I think it's one of those things where when you see a jersey on the screen versus seeing on TV versus then seeing it live, three different viewpoints of a jersey for sure. Because I think there's some gorgeous jerseys.
But also, it's, you know, when you're looking at a jersey hung up, right, or you're just looking at the image, it's the rest of the gear too, you know, that can make or break it, right? So
the Casper Roughnecks, right? You guys, when you guys saw the pants, you died.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. Oh, I never think there was a socks on them too, right? Because they have like the mountain socks.
Yep.
Yeah. So brilliant. Really, really good thought process went into that.
Yeah, they had white. Didn't they have white pants this year?
Casper Roughnecks had like mountain pants.
Oh, okay.
Like,
yeah.
Pretty wicked.
Yeah. I mean, I think like I obviously, right, like I said, like with Instagram, social media, all that stuff, like kids these days, they love like the new shiny equipment. Yeah. They love the you know, modern uniforms and stuff changing. And it's tough, right? Like if you look at, you know, Ogden, you know, I'm going to go ahead and just pat myself on the back because that number 9 ranking they got is actually my design as well that I designed before I left there to go to Provo. So I'm glad Sean and Kenny will get to hear that. But it's just, you know, it's a clean look. And I think every team in our division has a really, really solid color scheme and a really good solid design on a lot of their different stuff. And they're all extremely different. Like Idaho stuff last year, when I first saw it, I was like, I didn't know what to think. It was extremely caught me off guard. And I was like, I have no idea how this is going to go over, but I'll tell you, like seeing their white jerseys in person, like they wore them last night against us and we wore blue. Their white jerseys really pop with that logo. Yeah. It's more of a simpler, clean look. And, you know, for me, I think their white jerseys and their white uniforms are some of the best in the entire league. So,
yeah, and I think the people voted for that because I know that Steve gave Ogden's jerseys 3rd overall. So Steve loved your design there with the Ogden Mustangs jerseys. And then, the Idaho Falls Bud Kings. I mean, Sam, our co-host there with the Rogue Valley Royals, ranked the Idaho Falls Bud Kings 1 overall. So he would agree that he loved them. And I think Idaho Falls showed some love to Sam, too. I think he appreciated the shout out. But I mean, your Provo Predators this year, you guys have put together a pretty damn good team. You had your ups and downs. You started off the season really hot. Then you hit one or two lulls throughout the season where you kind of hit some rough spots. But and I from looking at what I could see there, I think injury had a big piece to play in that. But tell the listeners a little bit about what makes this Provo Predators team for this season special.
Yeah, I mean, I think every team in our division has gone through, you know, a rough patch, right? Like the Outliers obviously didn't get off to a traditional start like they normally do, but, you know, they've been probably the most consistent, you know, one of the stronger teams for sure, if not the strongest team down the stretch. You know, even Rock Springs, you know, Rock Springs got off to a tough start and they've been one of the more consistent, better teams over the last 2 months. So, you know, you're not immune to it, right? And like that was something we kind of tried to preach to our guys from day one is there's going to be ups and downs, right? Like there's going to be stretches that are awesome where it's amazing. And there's going to be stretches that are tough and, you know, they have to be learning experiences, but, you know, we really preach to our guys and like, you know, we tell them all the time, like, you know, one bad game, one bad shift, it doesn't define who you are as a player. It doesn't define our season, right? It's how you respond and react to stuff like that and bounce back that really kind of, you know, tells a story of who you are as a player and what you are ultimately as a team. And, you know, we're a really blue collar group. Like we don't have anybody that's in the top 10 in scoring. We don't have anybody that's, you know, 40, 50 goal score. All of our guys play 200-foot hockey, and, you know, we ask them to be reliable in all three zones and do the little detailed stuff, you know, win face-offs, block shots, finisher checks, you know, just understand really, you know, the little details of what it takes to win hockey games. You know, we're not a team that then can give up 5 or 6 goals usually and get into a track meet like Ogden can and put up 5 or 6 or 7 themselves and win games. Like, we try to be really good defensively, and, you know, we try to – try to keep scores low, and you know, we take our opportunities when they come, because we do have creative players. Like, we have players that can generate offense, but you know, we don't have any players that I would say are one dimensional and just offensive guys. All of our guys are pretty well rounded and 200-foot players. So
it's been a great season to watch you guys, and now we're leading into the playoffs. What are you kind of expecting out of this Utah Outliers team as you head into that playoff mindset? Now, they do have a couple games left in the season for themselves, but I mean, they're locked in at number two, so they're probably just going to rest some of the guys and give some other guys some opportunities while still making that playoff push, because Utah doesn't give away games, nor does Ogden. So they're still going to be that strong, I guess, hatred in this weekend series upcoming, but you will be facing Utah in the coming week. So what are you expecting out of the Utah Outliers for this series?
You know, this weekend will be interesting because those are two organizations that are used to winning, right? And even though Ogden clinched first, I can assure you the Outliers, they want to win both those games. And like you said, it's a balance between making sure your guys get the rest they need to be ready to go the following weekend for playoffs. But with that rivalry and that animosity between those two teams, I have a feeling those are going to be probably more heated games than people think. And I know Kenny wants to win. So, you know, whatever they got to do and to make sure their guys are in a good spot for next week is all well and good, but they're definitely going to be playing to win those hockey games. So, you know, when we look at the Outliers, like, you know, obviously that's an organization that's been around for a long time. Paul's a great coach. You know, he does a lot of really good things, and his teams are very, very well coached. They're very detailed. They're very systematic. And, you know, they play the game the right way. And it's just, you know, they're a very opportunistic team. You know, they don't get the scoring opportunities or put up the shots on goal a team like Ogden does. But when they get a grade A, it ends up in the net more times than other teams in our division put it in. So, you know, they really capitalize on opportunities. They're very smart. They're very disciplined. You know, obviously you can tell, it's no secret. You know, we're the physical presence in the league as far as penalty minutes go. And I think some of that comes with how we ask our guys to play. You know, we have been better of late as far as taking penalties, but we play a physical brand of hockey. Like, we want our guys to play the body. We want our guys to, you know, finish their checks as far as themselves not taking themselves out of the play. But, you know, we want to make sure that we wear teams down and come at them in waves. And, you know, the Outliers are a pretty good balance of all that stuff. Like, they've got guys that can play physical. They've got very creative offensive players. You know, they've got kids that when they get the puck between the hash marks, it doesn't really matter who's in net. It's going to end up in the back of the net, right? So you got to be really prepared. You got to be really focused, and you got to make sure you get off to a good start against that team. And you got to stay out of the box, which is going to be our main challenge and our main focus, is to play 5-on-5. Because they're a team, if you put them in a special teams battle, they're going to get the better of us. So, you know, that's our focus, is to try to find this week here where we can play within our game, not change the way we play, but not give up opportunities on the special team side. So,
because Utah is a strong team. They're consistently the strong team. They've been kind of the lead out of the Mountain Division now for several years running, even back to the Tier 3 years, for basically up until this season. And I think that's one thing that those have been watching the NCDC this year. As you mentioned, the Ogden fan base and the Pueblo fan base is pretty well versed in the game at this point. And again, the Utah fan base, where Idaho's learning it, Rock Springs and Provo's fan bases are learning it, but it's different this season with the promotion of the Mountain Division to the NCDC. It was a thought process last year, it would appear, of, you know, still putting together those competitive teams, those Tier 3 teams, while allowing the coaching staffs to be able to prepare for the upcoming season when the rosters would have to have a big overhaul for Tier 2 level hockey. The NCDC did it right with basically the announcement being a year out, which really allowed these organizations like your Provo Predators to be able to still compete Tier 3 the year before and prepare the roster for what would be a Tier 2 organization the following year. And so I think the way that the NCDC did it with the promotion of the Mountain Division really allowed your organization and the other, at that time, I would say the other four organizations that were still there, to be able to adequately prepare. And I think that's why Rock Springs definitely struggled this year, was because they were kind of a new addition and didn't have all that preparation time the other five teams did. So it's been an adjustment year. All the rosters kind of had, most of them stayed relatively, I'd say, stable-ish, but pretty dramatic changes from the beginning of the year rosters to the end of year rosters for mostly every team. But Steve, I know that we were also talking about, we all have collections and we're all big collectors of sports gear. And you guys are relatively stable in your home environments to where you can mask that quality of collection where you're not quite sure where to put it. Where me, I've, you know, my collections had to diminish just due to relocation so often. And then pieces got stolen by movers and everything. Ken, Steve, we all saw your video before we jumped on. Would you consider yourself a hockey hoarder?
Almost everything collectible. I wouldn't say hoarder. It's not overflowing where you're tripping on the stuff.
Is it not, Steve? Is it not?
No, it's not. Okay. Plus, there like anything that of value is, you know, safely packed away in a pretty much a bulletproof box. yeah, I got a bit of an issue with it, but for my hockey collection, a lot of it had to do, you know, with getting autographs in person with guys, and it had more to do with talking to the guys and having a story behind the autograph, you know. So yeah, because it's always cool when a player will take a few minutes and you know, shoot the shit with you, right? So, you know, one of my favorites was always Brendan Gallagher, because he was always great to stop and chat for a bit. You know, he was great for that stuff. And actually this year, my younger daughter went with me to watch the Canadians play. And in the warmups, she was up against the glass and Gallagher gave her a little bump on the glass and she didn't know how to respond. I'm like, you're supposed to bump back. So he just smiled at her and kept going. But, you know, it's cool things like that, right? So, but yeah, I've got an insane collection of hockey movies, television shows, you name it, I got it. Now that I'm into Wrexham football, I got a pretty good little collection of that starting there too. But yeah.
Oh, dear. Okay. Oh, hit the brakes there, Steve. You gotta shed some collection. I'm here, by the way. You gotta shed some collection in order to make room for the new stuff.
Yeah. You sound like my wife.
Well, I sound like mine too, because I had a 140 jerseys, and I'm down to under 40 now because I ended up selling off a bulk of it, and I can't help it. I love my jerseys, which is why we do those jersey ratings. But Nick, you're also a collector, yeah?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm strictly hockey though. Like when I was a younger kid, like real little, I collected, and then I didn't collect for a long time. And then when COVID happened, you know, a lot of time obviously people spent at home. And that was just one of the things that kind of picked back up. So, you know, my wife was pregnant with our son Bennett, and you know, I wanted to kind of start a collection, so I had something to kind of do with him. You know, as he got older, and then I just kind of fell in love with it again. Right. So it's just one of those things where, you know, I've always been a huge Canucks fan. I've got a lot of Canucks memorabilia, you know, all the way back. I think I've got every jersey that they've ever had. I've got like over 50 of them, and a lot of them are autographed and signed. So, you know, I've probably put together a really good collection. My wife's only rule is she banishes me to the basement. So as long as it doesn't leak upstairs anywhere, she's usually pretty good about it, and lets me have my hobby down here. But, yeah, it's good. Like, I'm a hockey nerd. Like, I've got, you know, a few players that I personally collect, and a really nice collection that I put together, you know, here over the last few years. So
just quick on this, though, what is your favorite Canucks jersey of all time?
Ooh. So I'm a little different when it comes to the Canucks jerseys. Like, you know, obviously a lot of people like the blue and green. A lot of people are really excited about the new, you know, flying skate that came back. I like the West Coast Express era with, you know, Naslin, Bertuzzi, Morrison. So they actually had a jersey, man, I think it was, I can't remember if it was 03 or 04, that was like a color gradient where it was like navy up on the shoulders and it kind of bled down to red, maroon color at the bottom. Mm-hmm. It's probably voted one of their ugliest jerseys of all time, but it's one of my favorites with the silver numbers on it. So that one, and then the other one is the red, black, and yellow one that's kind of shoulder to hip going across that changes colors from, I think it's red down to black. It was like the end of the McGillney Bure era.
Yeah.
You know, those are my two favorites for sure. But I really like all their jerseys, all their designs. Like, you know, I like the blue and green look, obviously, you know, with the stick and rink logo and the Johnny Canuck stuff that was on the Adidas jersey last year. So yeah, I've just always been a fan of their stuff, always been a fan of their color schemes and their logos. So
So
for Nick, I was going to say, for creating some gorgeous jerseys, the fact that you like that like 03 Canucks jersey makes me question you now. That is one of the ugliest jerseys. I jumped onto NHLuniforms.com. I'm like, he can't be seriously talking about that. You are talking about the one I thought was awful.
Yes, it is completely awful. It's awful. But
well, Chris just to be fair, Chris hated that alternate jersey, you know, the one where it kind of faded on up from the green, you know what I mean? And it almost had that bubble effect. I liked it and Chris hated it. So right away, when you're mentioning that other jersey, I'm right in my head going, Chris is going to hate it.
Oh, yeah. So I'm putting my video on because as I mock you guys, I'm wearing the jersey that most Buffalo Sabres fans hate.
Yes.
The mustard yellow one. I got my Neuvirth jersey. I'm a huge Neuvirth fan. But most Sabres fans hated this jersey and I did too, but I still bought one because I was that fan. I have almost every Sabres jersey. So I understand your passion for Canucks jerseys.
That's funny. Like when teams go through stretches, like, you know, I think a lot of people used to make fun of the Buffalo Slug logo, right? When they were that same color scheme, but was just with that ugly logo. One of my friends in college was a huge Sabres fan, and I was always a big like fan of their red and black stuff with the Buffalo head. Like, I think that's a really good look, and it was at the time it was very different. And you know, I just think that Buffalo's got a really, really clean look with their blue color and the yellow that's a little bit brighter and the white, like the stuff they're wearing now with Owen Powers and Dahlin. Like, I just think that stuff they wear now is just really clean. It just looks really good.
It's classic. It's beautiful. I've got, up until they started with basically what I now start calling like all the throwback retro jerseys and the COVID jerseys, basically, when they started going nuts on different logos. So I basically have had I have the Slug. I have the black and red. I have one of the original blue and gold. I have my Malarchuk one. I got too many Sabres jerseys, but I understand it. Well, I really liked their 50th anniversary. I never got my hands on it. I liked their reverse retro jerseys were pretty incredible. I haven't got my hands on it, but I wait for the right deals. But I got my LaFontaine go ahead. That's a beauty. I got the Hasek one where it's the red. It was their third alternate jersey during the 90s where they went red, but they went the Sabres across the shield across as the crest without the Buffalo in it. And I got the Hasek one of that. And I don't know. I love my Sabres jersey. So sorry to hate on your Canucks jerseys there, but I mean, the Canucks have so many beautiful jerseys. Like I've got the Mogilny like early 90s jersey, which is, I think it's absolutely gorgeous. And then I really do like that one. I'm looking for the era of it, but basically one of their OGs. I like their original jerseys from the 70s. I think those are probably their best jerseys.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm a jersey nerd. So, like, obviously, you know, I don't know if you remember. I think it was my last year in Ogden, right before playoffs, we switched to that cream-colored jersey with the word mark across the front with Ogden spelled out. And that was a design that I really liked and had a lot of fun with, and I think the fans enjoyed it too. But, you know, like, I'm not a guy that's a huge Canuck. Like, I'm not a fan that's like hates on other team stuff just because I'm such a homer about my team. Like, I appreciate teams that have good looking and clean uniforms. Like, I've always liked Montreal stuff. Like, I think their uniforms are really clean and they look good. And I collect a lot of jerseys outside of the Canucks. Like, I've got some Columbus Blue Jacket stuff because I like theirs. And you know, I've got everything from NCAA. I've got four or five Notre Dame jerseys, Arizona State. I've probably got overall.
Yeah, well, the Sun Devils jersey is pretty cool. Like, that's a pretty
logo.
It's a pretty cool logo.
Yep.
The Oregon Duck, love their jersey.
Yep.
Yeah, there's some great jerseys out there, which is, I think, why we've done so many jersey episodes. And, yeah, I mean, for all the Sabres jerseys I have, I would say that, you know, I sold a lot of jerseys that were still Sabres jerseys, but a lot of I had mostly NHL jerseys, but I've had – and still do. I still have like KHL jerseys and college jerseys and junior jerseys. And I run the gauntlet of jerseys. I'm a jersey guy, but I think I've been told I have to max out at 40, which is why if I get a new one, I have to give one up. Like, I got one of those beautiful Buffalo Stampede jerseys. When they did a specialized Buffalo Wings, Buffalo Stampede jersey. Those are stunners. I think those are gorgeous jerseys, but yeah, I mean, for the jerseys you designed so far, they've been pretty killer.
Yeah, no, I think like I said, I try to take a lot of different ideas from a lot of different places. Like I told you, the red ones that they have in Ogden that they still wear. You know, when I designed those, the design idea actually came from the New England Patriots red retro jerseys with the shoulder stripes. I just wanted to see how it would look in a hockey setting, and Yeah, they turned out really well. They look good. I think, you know, just looking at our jerseys in Provo, you know, like the rich blue color was something that we wanted last year, but with how quickly everything turned around and how fast the organization switched hands, it was already July. So we were kind of handicapped as to what we could order. And, you know, black was pretty much the only one where we could get helmets and stuff to match. So that's why we wore black last year. And then, you know, our priority this year was obviously getting to that more rich, you know, royal blue color. And, you know, I just think that royal blue with the white, like when Montreal used to wear the white jerseys, you know, it just looks really sharp, and I think it pops really well. And with our blue helmets and pants, and the design for the white jerseys is actually Air Force. You know, if you look at their jerseys, the way that the color scheme goes, it goes kind of like the color on the bottom of the jerseys, the one that matches the helmet, where we kind of flipped it, right? So instead of having white at the bottom on ours, we put white on top to match the white helmets. And I think they turned out pretty good too. So, you know, we're pretty happy with them, and we've gotten pretty good feedback about, you know, other teams in the league and fans and stuff on social media about them really liking them as well. So
I think what we're going to have to do here, Nick, is have the epic of all epic jersey, you know, rating thing. We'll have to include you on this because it doesn't matter which league. We'll have to do the top 20 jerseys of all time.
Yeah, there's some great ones out there. Like I always go through and look at, you know, all the Canadian leagues. I go through the Premier. Like there's some Premier teams out there that are doing some really cool stuff with their jersey design. You know, there's some of them that are basically like walking billboards too. Like there's a huge mix of all kinds of jerseys all over the place. But, you know, I always take time and appreciate when somebody's got a really good, clean look. So
now quickly on this, before we talk about your team one more second here. So since you're a Canucks fan, what do you think about the resurgence of this team, and especially a player like Brock Besser?
Yeah, I mean, like he was on the way out, right? Like they were, they made it seem like he was gone, right? And I think for them, I'm a big believer in goaltending. And I think last year and the year before, you know, Demko obviously struggled with some injuries, and, you know, he's been pretty healthy, obviously, besides this last little stretch here with his knee. But, you know, it all kind of just came together this year. Like I think the COVID year, you know, in the bubble, they did well, but I think everybody knows there's an asterisk by that one. So, you know, as you start moving forward, you can see the pieces there, but the depth, you know, as far as the little stuff, really kind of turned around here when Tock took over. And I think Tock has done a great job with them. And they're just a really complete team. And they're one of the teams that'll kill you on special teams. Their power play is really good. And they're just really deep. And especially when they get the goaltending, they're tough to beat.
Yeah, to Smith, actually, they played the Habs last night. He was pretty huge. Didn't love the refereeing in the first period, though. I'm not going to whine and cry and say the refs took it from us, because we weren't getting a bite of Smith. We had some good looks, but just the Smith played a huge game. But just didn't like the second goal because two of our players were taken out. I was like, okay, come on, guys. But, you know, the Besser thing, you know, this is why I always laugh at fans. Goal scorers are going to go through this. Players are going to go through this, right? They have something personal going on in their life, and their head's just not where it needs to be. Because could you imagine if you unloaded Besser, you know, at the end of last season, and he was on another team and having the season he's having this year, you guys would be kicking yourselves, right?
Oh yeah. Well, it's the same thing too with a guy like Nils Höglander. Like Nils was another guy that wasn't really doing anything, and then all of a sudden this year, a lot of teams I feel like would have given up on him, and you know, he worked himself out of it, but he's, you know, lightening up this year. As far as, I think it's his goals per 60 minutes played, he's up there amongst some of the top guys in the league. And like I said, they're finally getting the secondary scoring that they haven't gotten for a long time, and they're getting the goaltending, and their defense is really, really solid with Roenick and Quinn Hughes as a pairing. And, you know, I'm not one to sit here and say, like, I think Quinn Hughes is better than Cale Makar, but I think he's right there with him. So, you know, if I was choosing a franchise, I'm happy with Quinn. I think he does a good job. He's dynamic. He's kind of that prototypical defenseman now you see at that level that skates really well. He's got really good edges, makes good first passes, his vision's good. And
he threw a big body check a couple games ago. Everybody in the bench was, like, looking at him like, God, now he's going to go for the big hits. So,
yeah. Right.
Though I had a good laugh though last night. A little cool Caulfield laid into Pettersson pretty well.
I saw that Pettersson's about, it looks like he's about 130 pounds soaking wet. So sometimes he gets bodied a little bit, but he's usually pretty smart about staying out. But last night was tough. I'm sure everybody that coaches and works like we do, you know, you try to not pay attention to them. So I could listen to it on the way home. And I'm always not smart enough to turn the alerts off on my phone. So the 3 hours I was going to eat up on the way home got ruined as soon as we got off the ice after we played like crap last night to even add on to it. So
I was a fun hockey game up until the third period. I'll tell you that much. Once you guys got the third goal, I was like, okay, the Habs are coming back from this one. And Montembeau just wasn't on his game. Like, I'm not one to fault goalies ever. You know, he did well, but there was a couple. I'm like, Monty should have had those, but whatever. Yep. It's at this point, if my team looks competitive and we're playing close and tight to top teams, it's all I care about at this point. Now back to your team. So expectations in round one here, you know, you were talking about staying out of the box, you know, that's one of your big things, and then sticking to your game. You know, what do you think is going to give you an edge, you know, in this next series? What do you think your boys can do to catch them off guard?
You know, I think for us, it's just consistency. With us having a young team and some of our younger guys playing a large role, I think it's consistency for sure. And, you know, being mentally prepared every single night. Like we don't have the luxury of, you know, playing a team where we can get off to a bad start and be able to recover from it. Like if you're not ready to go from opening puck drop against the Outliers, you're going to be
able to make you pay.
Yep. They're definitely going to make you pay. And they're very good in the neutral zone. Like when I watch film on them and, you know, do research, like the way they play in the neutral zone, as far as defensively is very, very good. And, you know, it's a tough system to play against. It's tough to figure out. And, they have given us fits all year. I think Ogden, we went 5-3-2. So we split the season series right down the middle with them, same amount of points earned. And I think we won every other season series that we played. The Outliers, we did not. So, you know, that's the team that we've kind of struggled to figure out this year. So, you know, once we figured out we were playing them in round one, we've really started doing a lot of different deep diving and just trying to analyze some stuff and figure out, you know, where we can improve and things that we can do better into the playoffs. But, you know, like mentioning the Brock Besser thing is really interesting because, you know, like I look at a guy on our team like Michael Polston, who, you know, he was basically kind of given to us by, you know, Idaho. They had a lot of good goalies at training camp, and then unfortunately they couldn't keep all of them. So Michael came our way and just kind of fell in our lap, and he's kind of been our backbone all year. And, you know, he got off to such a great start and had great numbers, and then he kind of went through a little bit of a lull. And his grandfather actually passed away just after Christmas time. So he took about 10 days to 2 weeks and had to go home and deal with that. And mentally for a kid his age, it's extremely tough. And it was very heavy for him, you know, mentally for a while and what he was dealing with. But, you know, since he's come back, he's kind of dedicated the rest of his season to his family. And man, he's been terrific. Like, every single night, like the kid prepares like nobody else. You know, he's at the rink usually before the coaching staff, and he's usually thereafter. And just the way he handles himself like a professional and the way that he treats the game, he's just a winner, right? So when you look at the playoffs, and you know, a lot of it comes down to goaltending. And you know, we really like Michael. We believe in him. You know, we really trust him. And we've also got other goaltenders that are more than capable. You know, Ryan's got good numbers. He's played well for us, you know, for the most part of the season. Ryan Henry has. And you know, Jeffrey Fillion just kind of came out of nowhere and has been really good. The only problem with him is he's got about the ugliest set of pads with blue and white jerseys I've ever seen. But he's a tremendous kid. He's been extremely patient. He's bided his time and just kind of waited for an opportunity. And the two opportunities he's gotten, he's made the most of them. I think he's given up one goal in the two games that he's played. So, you know, I think having that stability on the back end as far as goaltending goes – really goes a long way. But yeah, Michael's been a stud for us, and you know, we're actively talking to a lot of different schools for him and trying to figure out, you know, what his roadmap looks like. But goaltending plays a huge part in the playoffs, right? It doesn't matter what level it is. It doesn't matter.
Well, it's every year. Like the only time I can tell you, I remember watching, you know, playoffs where goaltending didn't matter. It was the Detroit Red Wings back when they were on their cup runs. Cause you know, I remember Chris Osgood in two different, you know, it was in the same playoffs, but it's just two different series, letting in a shot from the red line. Now Oscar could come up and make some big saves, but when people were trying to say to me he should be in a Hall of Fame, I'm like, no he shouldn't. Like
no, I mean,
you go back and you watch that team, like those Red Wings were some of the best hockey teams, you know, that were ever put together, right? So you know, it didn't matter who you had in net. You know,
well, like that's the with teams like that and dynasties like that, like I would say the same thing about the Blackhawks with Taves and Kane. Like I feel like at times I could have played goalie for them and they still would have won Stanley Cups. And, you know, at that point, when your team's that skilled and that talented, you don't need a goalie that can steal you games. You need a goalie that can keep you in games. And
yeah,
like you said, that's not a Hall of Fame goaltender, right? That's just a very good goaltender. And I think, you know, for teams like you were alluding to with Yzerman and the Red Wings and you know, Taves and Kane and the Blackhawks, and you just need a guy that everybody really likes. And everybody on the team, you know, is going to add to the culture, and guys want to play in front of him. But yeah, like you said, he's a game manager. He's not one that's gonna come in and steal you a handful of games throughout the course of the season. But he keeps you in every game, right?
Yeah. And as a Habs fan, like, you know, Carey Price would catch so much flack, you know.
Yep.
And you just look at where they are now without him, right? And you know, and this is what I always, Chris and I will always say as being, you know, attendees, it doesn't matter if you let five in, they could be five incredible goals, but it's the people that just look at the score and say, oh, that goalie sucks. I'm like, Carey had nothing in front of him for, I don't know how many years in a row. And he was still managing to get that team in the playoffs. So it's a totally different Montreal Canadiens team with him in the lineup, you know, a healthy Carey Price. He could take you everywhere like he did, you know, in that last cup run that we had. So yeah, so your goalie, if he comes out strong, like there's your, you know, that could be the series for you, right? If he's locked in and your team can just counterpunch, then you've got a shot. Like that's, I agree with you 100%. I always shake my head at teams that are trying to build, you know, outside of the goal first. I'm like, that's so tough to do. You know, you've got to have like a high powered offense and a really solid defense if you've got a mediocre goaltender. And it's just, you know, especially in playoff hockey, that can get exposed pretty quick. Like, look at the New Jersey Devils. You know, for them, apparently from what I was told, Jake Allen, they were set to trade to Jake Allen to the Devils back in December. And Allen said no, and the Canadians kept doing that three goaltender rotation. He's there now, and his numbers are great. So if I'm wondering how that season would have looked if Jake Allen went over there sooner. Because, you know, you look at that team, it's not a bad hockey team at all. Just couldn't keep the puck in the net and get those, you know, opportune saves. So, anyway, yeah, there's my little spiel on attendees.
Yeah.
No, Chris and I aren't biased, by the way, at all. Just
you know, like I've been pretty fortunate, like, you know, with my coaching career, I've had good goaltenders, you know. In Ogden, we had, you know, Domagoj Troha, who was very good. You know, we had Marco D'Aronio. There was a lot of really good goalies that went through there. You know, in Provo last year, we had Sava Serduk, who I had in Ogden for a brief time before he came back. And David Orzmog last year was very good. And, you know, this year with our goaltending situation, it's just been great. Like, we've got three completely different goaltenders here right now. And we've got an actual 06 here right now. And Sam Pollard, who was with the Oregon Tradesmen to start the year. He's a Canadian kid that we really believe in and we really think is going to be a future number one. But unfortunately, with the way the season kind of went down to the wire, we didn't get a chance to work him into anything that we wanted to work him into. But he's a terrific goaltender as well. And to have him as an 06 be able to play behind guys like, you know, Michael and Ryan and Jeffrey, it really just kind of pushes the envelope, you know, with them all being 04s and having a lot of experience. You know, Jeffrey won a USPHL Premier Championship. You know, Ryan's been with a lot of really good organizations, and there's just three completely different goaltenders. And I think that helps a young kid like Sam. Like, Michael's extremely technical sound. You know, he's very, very calm. He's very patient. You know, he kind of waits for pucks to come to him. And Ryan's probably one of the most athletic goalies I've ever seen. He makes some saves that there's no way in the world any other goalie can make. You know, but he also kind of gets a little out of control sometimes, and you got to kind of rein him back in. But his athletic ability is off the charts, and he's the type of goalie that, you know, he'll have his off nights here and there, but he can come in and absolutely win you a game. Like that game we played against Ogden in our building a few weeks ago, we ended up losing, I think, 4-3 in a shootout. We had a 5-minute major down the stretch where Ogden scored two goals in the last few minutes and tied it up. And then we lost in a shootout, but Ryan Henry did everything he could to win us that game. I mean, he made 50 something saves. He made 5 or 6 ridiculous saves in the shootout, and we just couldn't put one in to help him out. And, you know, we're just very fortunate to have those guys here, you know, in net, and our defensive group's been very good. Like, you know, we've got two guys that really kind of embody what you want in a leadership group with Jackson Lucia and Tyler Johnson back there. And, you know, Ryan Coots, who came to us out of the Premier League, you know, he's been really, really good for us. Vit Baran, who came from the BCHL, he was in Powell River. You know, he's really come in and stepped in and played a lot of big minutes for us. And then our other guys too, like Gavin O'Hara, I think's probably got one of the brightest futures for an 05 with his size, you know, being 6'5", 6'6", and very heavy, very physical. He fights. He's got a great shot. He scores goals. He's a great skater. He's a really good teammate. You know, he's just a really, really high energy guy. We gotta let him read the lineup every night just to get a little energy burned off before we start the game so he doesn't run through the wall. But yeah, our back end's really good. Like, you know, goaltending, defense, like we've got a lot of guys that are really wired the right way. And, you know, they may not be, you know, high end skill as far as putting up a ton of points, but they play the game the right way and they're great teammates. So
yeah, it should be an awesome playoff run. I mean, it's been great to watch all season. And but yeah, you guys ended up with at the trade deadline, the Brad Marchand of the NCDC Mountain Division and Owen Ames, who is basically at this point had been a lifetime bowl. And I mean, if you want to talk about somebody that's amazing to have on your team when he's on your team and you hate when he's not, I think Owen Ames is the perfect description of that player. Because I've never seen one player so well just draw every possible penalty during a game to get the other team off their game.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, just to be completely transparent with you, like, Owen's, you know, he's been a pain in my ass for four seasons now. And when we were looking down the stretch, like, and we figured out, you know, the type of game that we want to play and the type of team that we are, like, we thought that we were a team that, with the way that we play, big, heavy, and physical, you know, we're always kind of toeing the line. And some of our younger guys struggle to kind of figure out where that line's at sometimes and cross it. And Owen, with his experience in Pueblo and you know, the things that he did there for them, he just knows exactly where that line's at. And, you know, he's agitating. He's got skill. He's always in your face. But the most important thing is, you know, he's a great kid. And he added to our culture and our locker room. He added a lot of value in the locker room. And, you know, I think for him, you know, getting an opportunity to kind of get a fresh start and kind of reset his hockey career a little bit, you know, I think it's been good for him and it's been good for us. Like, he's stepped in and done a really good job for us as, you know, coming into a leadership role. And, you know, he's the kind of guy that if you come out to practice and you're not ready to go, he's going to get you ready to go. And if not, you're going to be getting in the dust up pretty quick. And he just pushes the envelope. And, you know, the first couple of days of practice, he's pissing guys off and rubbing guys the wrong way. And now, you know, everybody would take a bullet for the kid because, you know, they know he just wants to win and they know he just wants everybody to give their best every single night. And that's exactly what he embodies and what he does. So
yeah, he plays that style game. He's the, we've all played with that player. And again, you've been facing him now for years where it's great when you have him on your team, but God, you hate playing him. But, you know, I think what you said there was great too. Cause I think the way we wrap up this podcast is, again, kind of another thing that you talked about, not only with him, but with, you know, setting up players like Michael, talking to schools and everything. What's, you know, kind of the focus of the organization, obviously, is junior hockey, but it's promoting these players to the next level. And so how does the Provo Predators help players get to that next level?
Yeah, I mean, that's like, you know, I can't speak for every team in our division or every team in our league. Like, I can just tell you, you know, our philosophy is, you know, we want to know that we're a tier two organization, but we also want to know that, you know, we're still a development model and the fact that, you know, we want our guys to play the highest level possible. So, you know, we're trying as actively as we can to promote our guys, like, you know, a kid like Caleb Bendel, who we had at the beginning of the year, was doing very well. Like, you know, I reached out to Steve at Colorado with the Grit and suggested him to him, and he's went there and he's been there ever since. And he's doing well. He's learning how to play the game at, you know, the North American League level. So, you know, for me personally, like, we just want our guys to play D1 hockey. If we can get them there, we want them to play the highest level possible, NCAA, D3, whatever it is. And, you know, we're actively always working just as hard for them, you know, off the ice as they're working for us on the ice, right? So, you know, I think every team in our division's doing everything they can to promote their guys. But, you know, we look at our guys as, you know, regardless of whether we win a national championship this year or not, you know, if we can get the majority of our players ready to play at the next level next season, then we've done our job, right? So, you know, we want to promote our guys. We want to develop them as best we can, not only as hockey players, but also as human beings, especially with us having such a young group, right? You know, they come in, they're used to playing in front of mom and dad. They're coming off a U16 team or a U18 team, and they've never played juniors before. There's a lot that goes into it, and it's a completely different game. Just because you tear it up and light it up at the U16 or U18 tier one level, doesn't mean you're going to come into juniors and have that same success. Like, we have a guy on our team named Jonathan Doucette. You know, he was over 100 points last year at Boston Hockey Academy. Really, really good player. All the skill in the world. Used to being the guy on the power play, the guy that scores the goals, the guy that plays the big minutes. And, you know, he came to us and struggled right out of the gate, you know, and I think it was probably November, because he wasn't getting those top 6 minutes. He wasn't getting those power play opportunities. And when he went home for Christmas break, you know, we just told him, like, Johnny, if you really want to succeed and you want this to work, like, you got to come back and you got to be willing to do stuff that you probably haven't done before. You know, so you got to make that decision internally and see if it's right for you. And he came back after Christmas, and I've never seen a player more determined in my life. Everything from blocking shots to some of the, go back and look at some of the hits he threw this weekend. And the kid's tiny. I mean, he's one of the smallest kids on our team. He's an 06, and there's nothing to him, but he blocks shots. He does whatever he has to do to win hockey games. And he's the perfect example of what we want for our younger guys. So, you know, he comes back to us after Christmas and he does everything we ask of him. So we're going to do everything we can to help that kid. And, you know, we want a whole team full of that. And, you know, we feel like with our culture and with our roster of guys that, you know, we may not have the high end talent as far as, you know, point production that some of these other teams have, but we know we got 21 gladiators that are going to get on the ice every night and they're going to give everything they have and they're going to play 200 foot hockey. So it's going to go our way sometimes. And sometimes we're going to come up short like we did last night, but it's never going to be for a lack of effort. So.
Yeah. And I think that's what a lot of players and parents out there need to consider when you're looking at the next level is what are you willing to put into that next level as well? You know, the teams, generally speaking, if it's a good organization, it's going to be doing its best to promote you up. But because you were the top player at your previous level doesn't mean you'll be the top player at the next level. It's kind of like a lot of the age outs now that are leaving the junior hockey world and going into college. They're now the rookies again. And it takes that transition. You're not going to get the best minutes when there's been a player on the team for 3 or 4 years. You might feel that you're better. You might be better. But that player's earned that spot. And you've got to come to that roster and earn your spot.
Well, and that's kind of like youth hockey in general right now. And, you know, I think that, you know, we live in a society with hockey right now where it's instant gratification, right? Like, kids want success right away. They want everything, you know, kind of right off the bat. And I think that, you know, that's where the downfall is for a lot of kids at the junior level is, you know, whether things work out, you know, at the junior level or not with us or with any other team in our, you know, division, I think we're all trying to teach kids, you know, how to play the game at the next level. And we're trying to get them ready to play NCAA hockey. So, you know, if you don't like the things that we're trying to teach you here and the things we're trying to hammer down to you here, like, you're running away from a problem you're going to have to face eventually if you want to play at the next level. So, you know, we want our guys best prepared for any situation. We don't want to look at the last 5 minutes of a game and say, hey, we have to put this line on the ice because we're down a goal and we need a goal, or hey, we have to put this line on the ice because we're up a goal and we need to protect the lead. Like, we want to be able to trust our guys and anybody that we have, it's next man up. And, you know, we just want to make sure that all of our guys are learning how to play in all three zones.
Yeah. And I think that's important for players to hear. And yeah, I think this is also a great place to wrap this one up. We're going to really quickly check to see if Steve is back. Steve, you back? Nope, we don't have Steve back. So, you know, we lost Steve along the way, but Nick, we do want to thank you again for jumping on a podcast with us today.
No, absolutely. I always appreciate, you know, you and you guys. I think you guys do a great job with junior hockey. There's a lot of leagues. There's a lot of kids. There's a lot of players out there that get opportunities and, you know, get their name kind of on the radar because of what you guys do. So, you know, kudos to you guys for what you do as far as the social media stuff goes, and keep at it.
We appreciate it. That's our goal. There's a lot of talent out there, and it's really hard for teams to be able to see everything. So, you know, we have been reached out to by multiple organizations from everything between tier 3 to tier 2 to tier 1 and in Canada and college organizations they're made aware of a player based off our podcast. So it's great to see that these players are getting those opportunities. But I think this is a great place to, again, wrap it up. We want to, again, thank the GM of the NCDC's Provo Predators, Nick Dreyer, for jumping on with us today. And we want to thank all of you listeners for tuning in. So make sure to follow us on social media to stay up to date. And that said, this is the Pigeon Hockey Podcast with Chris and Steve. And remember, listeners, always clear your crease.